Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
And Fred is also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. Today, we're not going to talk about a Creation Research Society publication, although they have the greatest publications.
Yeah, they do. But today we're going to talk about Creation Magazine that's put out by Creation Ministries International. It's a fantastic magazine. You can find out more about it on creationontheweb.com.
That's right.
And we're going to go through a lot of their articles today. Very well put together magazine. Oh, great graphics, illustrations.
Tremendous.
Just fantastic.
And for the next week, if somebody purchases something from Bob Enyart Live, say our Creation Science Pack, we'll be happy to give you a gift subscription to Creation Magazine to go along with that. But I'd like to ask first, as we go through these articles, let's talk about them. Like, they have an article here about the Venus flytrap. We've all heard of the Venus flytrap, right? It actually is a meat eater. It eats insects.
It's a carnivorous plant that eats insects.
Wow.
And as many people know, it has that closing mechanism. But what's real interesting about this is that it has a really interesting sensor apparatus. It has a kind of a safeguard mechanism so it doesn't close all the time on, like, you know,
because
the smallest little insect or wind or something. It has
Think of all the energy and resources it would waste, all the metabolism.
That's right.
If it was just closing for no reason.
That's right.
Like,
so
a little bit of a leaf falls into it and it would close and go through all that effort that takes hours, close, digest, and there's no meal there. So it has a mechanism where the insect has to move twice and touch these little tiny hairs twice within 20 seconds. Otherwise, it's not going to close.
That's right. It has a great mechanism for kind of watering out false triggers.
And it also won't close completely. Once it starts to close, it figures out if there's really a meal there. And if it's not, it starts to close. Then I say, wait a minute, there's nothing here, and it'll open up. That's a good indication. That's what, one species out of a million, and they're all sophisticated.
Oh, that's right. It shows complex design and information that has to be there for this apparatus to work as it does and to save the energy as you just described. It's pretty remarkable.
So let's say evolution really were true and there was a Venus flytrap that happened to evolve, right? It digests insects, meat-eating, carnivore, and it was wasting all its energy and it was dying out.
Yeah, I would think over time, natural selection would remove it from the plant population.
Yeah, they just die out.
Yeah.
But it has to evolve. It doesn't know what it needs. It has to randomly develop a mechanism for not wasting its energy.
And underlying this mechanism is, of course, a DNA, a code, a program. And we know from information science, a code can never arise naturalistically. It's a fundamental problem with all these intelligent design things we talk about.
Right.
How do you describe where the code comes from? Who sent the code? You can't have a code without an intelligent sender.
Yeah, what a great point. Okay, so now let's look at the next article. It's actually an editorial about creation being an antidote for depression. And this is really cool, Fred, because in here they quote from people who say, you know, I realize why I've been depressed for so long. And here are people who think that they were just animals, just an accident, no eternal hope, and what a bleak outlook. And it turns out to realize that you're not just a bit of slime on the planet, but you're made in God's image and likeness, that's an antidote for depression.
Oh, absolutely. It mentions Anthony Flew, and he put out a book recently. He was an atheist at Oxford and just shocked, you know, his ardent followers who were just amazed that he proclaimed that he was no longer an atheist.
Yeah, and so you've got people who are willing to look at the evidence and say this cannot be the result of just random occurrences with the laws of physics, because the laws of physics, they don't deal with nouns and verbs like you have in the DNA code. You have this sophisticated object-oriented programming language in DNA, and there are no laws of physics that enable those things.
That's right. And, you know, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen, and, you know, nobody will have an excuse. And, you know, this article really touches on the hopelessness you have if you believe in evolution, yet the evidence is right in front of you.
And so they talk about Anthony Flew, who, after 60 years of being a prominent atheist, announced just in 2004 he's no longer an atheist. And he gave the same argument that Richard Dawkins gave in Ben Stein's movie Expelled. He said, well, when we look at molecular biology and the genetic code, there's maybe evidence there that there was an intelligent designer. But they contrast that with this professor of chemistry at Oxford, Peter Atkins, who's an atheist. And he has said that man is, quote, just a bit of slime on the planet. So that doesn't inspire purpose and sacrifice.
No.
So, and Richard Dawkins is quoted in here saying that we live in a universe that has no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. And, you know, when you treat these people with indifference, they get angry.
Oh, absolutely.
They get angry. They don't take their own drugs. They don't believe their own lies. They think they're very important.
Well, and you mentioned the movie Expelled. If you haven't seen the movie, and I don't think it's in the theaters anymore, but it'll be out on DVD soon, you need to see this, because at the end of the movie, Richard Dawkins, I guess there's a subconscious in him where he was kind of acknowledged the design in the universe, but what did he do, Bob? He attributed it to aliens. This is the panspermia theory all over again. Francis right. Crick, who was a co-discoverer of DNA, he was a committed atheist, but the information in the DNA, this discovery was so overwhelming, he admitted there's no way this could have happened by natural processes. You can't right. get a code without a sender. So he said, instead of acknowledging that there is an intelligent God, he pushed the problem back in time and out into space.
Aliens. Maybe aliens.
Aliens seeded the planet millions of years ago. And that's what Dawkins suggested on Expelled. And it was.
And it doesn't answer the question. All you're doing is punting.
Exactly.
Because if it's too complex to originate here over 4 billion years, why is it then more possible to originate somewhere else? I mean, they don't even acknowledge that fundamental flaw in that absurd answer. Fred, these people don't think. They're afraid to think clearly because they know clear thinking leads us to a belief in God. And that's their
right.
end state. They refuse to acknowledge their creator. So the next article is about the size of someone's brain. And this is a crack up. We've touched on this in the past. Evolution is based on so many silly notions, like cartoon ideas. And one of them is that, well, chimps had little skulls, and as they turned into Homo sapiens, they evolved big skulls, and that's when our IQ increased. So what's with that, Fred? Is there a relationship between the size of a human skull and his intelligence?
Oh, definitely not. And as you mentioned, we've touched on this before in an article in CRSQ, where there's this thing that the evolutionists call the encephalization ratio, body mass to brain mass. And they were giving examples of Homo habilis evolving and how this ratio was getting larger as you got to Homo sapiens. But the CRS article pointed out that it didn't fit their paradigm at all. It was all over the map. You couldn't make an argument like that. And here we've got an example in this magazine, Bob, of someone with a brain that was very small.
Yeah, he's a guy from France, and he's 44 years old, married with two children, and he's working as a civil servant there for the government. And he went to the hospital complaining of a weakness in his leg. Now, this is from Britain's medical journal, Lancet, in July of 2007. And they did a CT scan that showed him to have massively enlarged cavities in his brain, so much so that his brain was reduced to a very thin layer of tissue next to his skull. So he had almost no brain at all. Almost his entire brain was missing. He just had this thin layer of a brain. And what do they say about his IQ?
It was within the normal range of humans.
Yeah, and he had gone about his life in a normal manner. So evolution, their paleoanthropologist, they claim that smaller brain size is evidence of a more primitive and less intelligent creature on its way to becoming a fully intelligent modern human. And that's simply wrong. And I like to point out, I mean, I've gone to college. Have you ever gone to college?
I've gone to college.
You went to college. And if you're in like a, let's say a physics class or a math class, And there are all these, let's say, Asian women, these tiny little Asian women, and these big football players. Who's going to score better on the finals in the physics exam? Well, the women with the tiny skulls or the big-headed football players?
Well, according to evolution, it should be the big-headed football players.
It should be, but that's another that's another fundamental assumption they make that flies in the face of obvious evidence.
It's just like you said, it's cartoons. Evolution is built on illusion. That's really a bunch of cartoons.
It's cartoons. It's sort of like even the 911's conspiracy arguments that when the planes went into the Twin Towers or into the Pentagon, why didn't it leave a shape like a Bugs Bunny running through a wall where you see his ears and everything? Of course it's not going to leave the shape of the wings. They're so light. They're filled with fuel. They fold in. It goes in almost like liquid practically. But anyway, so yeah, cartoon scientific claims to defend evolution. How about the next article about how dinosaurs were wiped off the face of the earth?
Well, Bob, it's just yet another theory they've come up with. A lot of people don't realize that the theory that is most often portrayed in the movies, TV, and whatnot is this big asteroid hit the planet and wiped out all the dinosaurs in Mexico, Yucatan Peninsula. And a great number of scientists realize that that's not true. Paleontologists especially dispute it because we don't see a sudden disappearance of dinosaurs in the fossil record. So anyways, over time, scientists have been coming up with different theories of extinction, and here's yet another one appearing here in this magazine.
Out of India, right? A lava flow that was massively more significant than the impact in Mexico.
That's right.
Massively more significant than a meteor impact. So if there is something you could look at the face of the earth and say, look at the disruption in the atmosphere, why is it a meteor in Mexico? You know why? That's more romantic. It's more appealing.
Oh, exactly.
And if it wiped out the dinosaurs, why not everything else? How about a million other species? But anyway, so what are your thoughts about
well,
this?
Well, I get a kick out of these because, you know, I've got a list that I go through and when I give this presentation on all these goofy theories for dinosaur extinction. And just to give you some of them. One is the Death Star. There's a sister star to the sun that spits out comets every 20 million years, and that's what wiped out the dinosaurs. You've got another theory that cataracts led to blindness, shrinking brain led
the
to stupidity.
Right.
Chronic constipation.
Why didn't they just evolve ophthalmologists?
Yeah. Okay. Then you've got one that says overeating, but he can't be right because another guy said starvation. Right. Here's one that cracks me up is mass suicide. This is a theory that was proposed by a scientist. And so I don't know if he found fossils at the bottom of a cliff.
It was
these dinosaurs retired of their life.
The weekend when there was a beaching of whales. That's what he proposed that.
And then one of the more modern theories is AIDS wiped out the dinosaurs. But one happened, I just saw it on O'Reilly Factor about 3 weeks ago. They had a scientist on. And guess what the latest theory is on the extinction of the dinosaurs?
What's that?
Global warming.
Global warming, of course. I mean, it's so cliche, right?
It's
so
it's
trendy. So whatever the latest trend is, that's the answer. And in this lava flow, this massive lava flow in India, it's interesting because in between these two massive, we're talking about a 1,000 square kilometers across India, have this massive 3,000 foot thick lava flow. Well, there are these two layers of lava flow. And right in between them is a 30-foot layer of marine sediment. And it's so obvious that this is tectonic activity during a global flood. There are these massive features on the surface of the Earth that are not described by local phenomenon. They're part of the crust of the Earth being broken up in a global flood.
Oh, yeah, definitely evidence of a huge catastrophe involving lots of water.
Yeah. So the next article, Fred, and we're going through Creation Magazine, put out by Creation Ministries International. And if you'd like a subscription to this, it's a beautiful magazine, full color, glossy. Then you could call Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278, or go online to KGOV, KGOV.com, make a $100 gift to Bob and Yart Live, or purchase our science pack, which is $100. You get all kinds of fabulous creation science resources, debates, books, videos, fabulous DVDs, or anything at Bob and Yart Live at our store online, or call and get our catalog. anything of $100 or more, and we'll give you a gift subscription to Creation Magazine. But Fred Williams, the next article is about design. And they say, sometimes design is skin deep. What's with the largest organ in our body? What does it tell us?
Well, it's amazing. It's, you know, how does skin stay in one piece and yet remain so flexible?
Yeah, how does skin do that? And it turns out that there's this sophisticated trick at the molecular level that the molecules in our skin is the largest organ in our body, and the molecules will grab onto one neighbor and then grab another neighbor and then release the previous neighbor, and they work like a zipper. Like a zipper zips and unzips. That's what the molecules in our skin tissue do.
That's right. And he uses an analogy of something like specialized Velcro.
Yeah, which these things are wildly sophisticated. And so you have an organism. Well, first of all, a simple single-celled organism, that's a misnomer. There's no such thing as a simple single-celled organism. But to have a single-celled organism that can reproduce, you have these wildly sophisticated functions you need, like you need a cell membrane. A cell wall is so complicated because it has to be able to identify valuable raw materials and allow them to pass through to the cell. And it has to keep the guts of the cell inside, and it has to be able to expel waste. That's all very sophisticated.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a reason why the DNA is housed inside of the nucleus within the cell. And then the RNA has to come in and read a copy and take it out, because the DNA would not survive outside of the nucleus. And, you know, this just shows, again, overwhelming complexity. What you're going to find whenever you look at creation is God is constantly thwarting a naturalistic explanation.
Yeah.
He could have done it differently to kind of make it maybe a little easier for them to come up with an explanation. But there's at every turn, it's so sophisticated, and there's little gotchas in there where there's no way it could happen naturalistically.
So just the single cell membrane, just the membrane. Forget about then you need the ability to process those raw materials, identify the right ones, process them, metabolize them, make energy units, and then use the energy units to accomplish all kinds of sophisticated work, including maintaining your DNA, your genetic material. And you need the genetic material, which is only going to survive inside the cell, and the cell needs the genetic material to exist. So they require one another. They're mutually dependent.
Which one came first?
Which came first, the cell or the genetic code to create the cell? And this is all irreducibly complex. And so you need the cell membrane. Then you have these organisms that have skin. And the skin, it has to function. If it's not pliable, if it doesn't move, that kind of organism's not going to survive. It's got to do so many sophisticated things. And if you have bad skin, it's not just that you're not going to get hired. You're going to die.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of glad my heart tissue is flexible.
Yeah,
if it didn't stretch and pump, you know,
yeah,
I wouldn't be here doing this radio show.
In fact, the heart has the same functionality, this zipper-like organization, as these molecules in skin cells. So this is just really exciting
really cool
stuff. Okay, let's go next. There are so many great articles in this one single issue of Creation Magazine. But, Fred, I'd like to talk about the geologists who were surprised as they measure the Earth's gravitational field. And this was just after the December 2004, the Christmas tsunami. Remember that?
Yeah,
off
exactly.
The coast
the
of
one
Sumatra?
That was like, how does it say in here how what that was on the Richter scale?
Oh, it was. It doesn't say in
that
here.
That was a huge one. But
it was like eight or something on the Richter
scale.
Yeah,
and what's really interesting is that I didn't realize, according to this article, and he says it may seem small, but it moved the Earth's axis by 4 inches, that one earthquake.
Yeah, very significant. And then the geologists thought it would take a long time for the crust of the Earth to settle back in and, you know, for a sort of a homeostasis, an equilibrium state to reoccur. And it happened so quickly, they were shocked that it could happen so quickly. They thought it would take 20 years. And it happened over a period of months. And so this shows us what we argue often with old Earth geologists. They say if the Earth was new, we should expect the crust of the Earth to be way more flexible and maybe produce way more earthquakes and way more. And we say, yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
It does produce way more earthquakes than you'd expect if it was 4 billion years old.
I found it interesting what one of the geologists said, quoted in this article. It's almost impossible for rocks to move that quickly. I mean, how many times do we hear? It's almost like saying, you know, I've made up my mind despite the evidence. It's almost impossible
right.
for that to have happened.
Evolution can't do this. It's almost impossible, and there it happens. We said that's because your assumptions are wrong.
Exactly.
1,000 times over, they're obviously wrong. Okay, and so how about this cute little picture of a possum, a baby possum in somebody's hand, and there was a discovery about pygmy possums. And these guys are marsupials. What's a marsupial? I think I remember that.
Yeah, that's the guys with the pouches.
They have a pouch like a
kangaroo.
Like kangaroo. All kinds of
possum
creatures are marsupials when they carry their young in a pouch. And it turns out that this pygmy possum was able to hibernate for 310 days.
Wow, that's a long time.
Long time without eating, right? And so in the longest hibernation on record was more than a year. One individual, that's an average of 310 days, hibernated for 367 days.
Well, that's interesting. How long was the flood?
The flood was about a year.
About a year.
The Bible says it was a year. They were in the ark.
So it's possible that some of the animals were put in a hibernation state.
So, right. What percentage of the kinds, Noah didn't have to bring species on the ark, but kinds, that animals that reproduce after their kind. So he didn't have to bring 1,000 species of canines. He could bring just one male and female dog. Canines.
That's right. That's right. He didn't have to bring the millions and millions of species that evolutionists, that's their one of their favorite straw man arguments is
right.
How did Noah get millions of species on the ark? Noah only had to take kinds of animals, and creation scientists conservatively estimate that you would need 13,000 animal kinds to populate the earth today with all the species we see. Species, again,
right.
is a man-made term. It's just, again, you can have...
So if they could reproduce after their kind, that's these creatures that Noah would have brought on the ark.
And skeptics are, even if they grant us that, yeah, there's only 13,000 kinds you need on the ark, they're like, well, how did Noah take care of all those animals? There's a great book called Noah's Ark, a Feasibility Study by John Woodmerap. I highly recommend the book. But one of the ideas put forth is hibernation is one way to take care of this. But you don't even need hibernation, really. There was plenty of room on the ark for the 13,000 animals. In fact, they would have taken up about 15% of the ark. You could have used the rest of the ark, a lot of it, for food storage, for even for waste area. And I know they probably had a mechanism for that, of dumping it off the ark. But anyways,
sure.
That book covers all these topics. You're going to hear those ad infinitum from evolutionists on, mm-hmm. you know, how did this and that happen on the ark?
Answers to Genesis in Kentucky with their creation museum, Ken Ham, they teach you so much. You learn so much about the ark. And, you know, there's some people have had a vision of actually building a life-size Noah's Ark. And if anybody ever could accomplish it, I think it'd be Ken Ham out there next to their creation museum. But Fred, there is such an answer to these fallacious arguments that you could not save biological life on an ark. And yet there are so many cultures that have in their history the story of a flood that wiped out all life except for the life that was preserved and an ark and a ship of some kind and a handful of people, 8 people. In fact, the Chinese pictograph, the symbol for a boat, is a vessel with the number 8 in mouths.
That's like right.
8 mouths to feed, which is Noah and his family, 8 people on the ark, as Jesus Christ, the Bible tells us. So pretty neat stuff.
Yeah, it is. In fact, the Chinese, there's a lot of symbols that point back to both the ark and even back to the Garden of Eden.
All right, we don't have much more time in this show, but I'd like to mention this article about a Christian biologist who was fired because he believed in creation. And that reminds me again of Ben Stein's movie Expelled, when they interviewed an editor for Scientific American, Michael Shermer. He's the guy I interviewed a couple years ago. And I asked him, I said, Michael, I know you're an atheist, but could you at least agree with the Bible where it starts out on page one that the sun is a light? So could you at least agree while the ancient world was worshiping the sun, the moon, and the stars, the Bible said don't worship them, they're not gods, that on page one of the Bible, Genesis 1, it says the sun is a light. Could you at least agree with that? And Michael Shermer, do you remember what he said?
I don't.
He said, the sun is not a light. And I thought, all right, where do we go from here? Talk about a bias, inability to be honest or truthful for fear of where simple truth
where it could
might
go.
Lead.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he said in that movie with Ben Stein, he said, where are creationists, where are people who believe in intelligent design being fired because of their beliefs? That's not happening. Where? It's so hysterical. Then the whole movie shows all these scientists who are fired because they think that life is too complex to evolve by chance.
That's right.
So this article talks about another biologist, a researcher who got fired.
Yeah, and you know, Bob, we know quite a few. I know. I don't know if you know Bob Allen. He's a friend of Pete Fisk's, and he was getting his PhD at Mississippi State, and he was more than halfway through the program, was, you know, from what he could tell, he's perhaps a top student. Well, he ended up giving a talk on creation. One of the professors saw that talk and spent the next couple months telling him that evolution is true and that you have to give up your views on creation. Well, he refused to do so, and he got drummed out of the PhD program. Mm. There's countless stories. I just got an email from a PhD doctor at CRS, one of the CRS members of his own getting expelled.
And this here is a Dr. Nathaniel Abraham, who worked at the prestigious Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in New England. And he's suing because he told his supervisor that he didn't accept evolution as scientific fact. And of course he's fired, of course, time and again, because those who believe in, they claim free speech, tolerance, diversity, the beautiful people, turns out not true. They're not going to allow you to think differently. These are the thought police.
That's right. It's indoctrination, not education.
So we're out of time, Fred, but can we do this again next week?
Oh, definitely. Sounds great.
Okay, Real Science Friday, another edition with Fred Williams, the webmaster for CRS, Creation Research Society. He has his own website, evolutionfairytale.com, a great site with fabulous original artwork. Fred, you got a great site.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
Our website is kgov.com. And if you call us or go online and make a donation of $100 or purchase any of our materials, $100 worth or more, the plot, an overview of the whole Bible, our debate with Zaketh, Does God Exist? I think you'll love that. It's just off the presses, the printing press, bound, a bound copy of Battle Royale 7, Does God Exist? Order $100 or more of our materials, and we'll send you a gift subscription of Creation Magazine. So thanks for tuning in. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. What a great school, Maranatha. May God bless you.